Hey guys, this is Cole Kublik from WJOX in Birmingham and the SEC Network, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 407.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com, and people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we're back. We've been having to do catch up on We Believe. So in the last several weeks, we've recorded two episodes covering the entirety of the Tommy Tuberville era. That was a lot of fun, I thought. Now we're back to do a regular show, and we're using new software this week, so that if you folks don't enjoy it this time...
Blame yourself?
Yes, the soundboard. The revenge of the soundboard. I was so tired of dealing with Skype and all of its ways of blocking the soundboard that I looked at Skype finally and I said,
"You have failed me for the last time."
And so I ripped out at least Skype from our regular Wishbone shows, and I replaced it with this new Zoom program, to which I immediately thought,
"Hey, we gotta get better at celebrating."
Yeah, because we have reason to celebrate now. You can hear the soundboard, which means that there's reason to use it again. It's no fun using it when you can't hear it. So, and
I say you.
Exactly. That's right. So we got it. We got it going on. That means now I have to go back to keeping it fresh, finding new clips, new audio, so that it's not the same old things over and over. Even though there are some that are, there are some that are, I guess, genuine classics. They're up there with the Mona Lisa. And, with Michelangelo, and that would be things like...
Smoke weed every day.
Of course, everybody. Those are classics. Classics, of course. But anyway, so we are
doing... just have a big, like a button in the Louvre, and you walk up and you press it, and it plays that clip. I think that'd be fun.
You mean... You walk up in the Louvre and you press a button and it says...
Please clap.
No, that's not the one. That's not the one. I don't want to overdo it. Don't want to overdo it.
You're just excited to have it back.
I'm excited to have it back because there's more recent things that were big hits, like when we had Chuck say...
And March Madness, let's shock the world!
That was one of our better received greatest hits, and of course my favorite of all of 2018, which I'm gonna hit one more time before I delete it.
Liberty Hate Week 2018.
Oh, that was good stuff. That was good stuff. At this point, all of our listeners out there are saying,
Come on, man.
I know. But we got it back, so I'll try to use it very sparingly from now on. I just kind of wanted to stretch its legs a little bit now that it's working again. So, but in any case, what are we here to talk about tonight, John?
Well, it is July 1st, and it is the depths of the off season. But it is like the first, faint glimmer of dawn on the horizon for the coming college football season.
It is.
Is the appearance of the preseason college football preview magazines.
Oh.
In your local bookstores. I have to say that I used to be able to find them everywhere, and now I literally had to go to a bookstore because, like, the grocery store, the CVS, the Target, all those places, they don't have magazine racks anymore.
What in the world?
They don't sell magazines anymore.
That's
crazy. Other than like People magazine next to the cash register. That's it.
Right. Wow. I hadn't even thought about that. That's nuts. Yeah. Well, I go to Barnes & Noble to get that stuff anyway, though I hadn't honestly thought about that. But I will say that at least when, well, I don't know, you probably get ACC stuff, don't you, on the cover?
Yes, this is a true statement.
I get Big Ten, except if there's an SEC special one, I get Missouri.
Nice.
It's hard for me to imagine that there's a big market for the special Missouri cover issue of Athlon or Lindy's or whatever. But now, you know the one I don't get anymore, right?
Which is?
The one where you pay like $15 to know how well Maryland plays on grass during the rain at night in years ending in an even number.
Phil Steele.
Yes, exactly.
I have the Phil Steele right in front of me here.
Well, you can share some of that. You can drop some knowledge bombs from Phil on us because I will never buy that magazine again. It's one of those things where there's so much and yet there's almost nothing. I would rather read four good pages of discussion of Auburn in like Athlon than get a book that's the size of the King James Bible in magazine form, and yet it's got a half a paragraph about Auburn that's not about Tommy Tuberville and Terry Bowden's era.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it has a lot of stuff, but a lot of it is really old. I know he's all about trends and stuff, so he leaves all that stuff in there, and it pads it out and makes it really big and thick. I hadn't planned on doing a rant about Phil Steele, but I do this occasionally on Twitter, so hey, why not, you know? So, I mean, the one thing you cannot say after you do look at the Phil Steele book is,
I don't have facts to back this up.
Because you certainly do have all kinds of facts to back it up, but it's facts from a long time ago, and I just don't see the value in it. So this is your baby. This was your idea, and that's great. I'm very excited about it, but you kind of run point tonight on what we're going to talk about it, all right?
Well, I guess the first thing I want to ask you is, what is your memory growing up and over the years about how does the appearance of the first preview magazine make you feel about the college football season?
Yeah, it's a good point. It makes you realize that basically spring is pretty much over, summer is settling in, and that means it's only the rest of that season until football season. You know, in other words, you don't have to wait through multiple yearly seasons like spring and summer and all that. It means that you're in the season where the football season starts at the end of it, basically in August. So that makes me feel like anticipation. It makes me feel good. It's tingly. It's like people are starting to think about it now. It's, you know, it's like when the last bowl game is over and all that, we kind of put it on the back shelf. Now, we never do, of course. You know, the SEC fans and real college football fans around the country, we never put it entirely on the shelf. But I don't know, if you're like me, you put as much of it on the shelf as you can just so you don't burn out, right? I want it to be fresh and new and exciting when September rolls around. I don't want to be like, oh, more football, you know? I want it to be new. So I kind of put it mostly on the shelf, and then when the magazines come out, that means it's time to start taking it back down again. What do you think?
That's a good analogy. I like that. No, 100%. It does. It's like the herald of the coming season.
Yeah.
You know, the first little blade of grass sticking up through the yard at wintertime or whatever. But I always really enjoy seeing the first college football preview magazine, like in the wild.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. it means that we can play the. Yeah. Get that game day music going in the background. It's like, ooh.
So is there, I know you've mentioned Athlon and Phil Steele. Is there one magazine that you like now or that you really liked growing up that you anticipated getting?
I don't know. I guess to me, they're fairly similar. There's the Sporting News. The ones that we get here, at least the last few years, are the Sporting News, Athlon, and Lindy's. and Phil Steele, but I ignore that one. So those are the four that we probably get. Is there another one out there that I'm...
No, I mean, in the old days, I used to really look forward to like the Sports Illustrated one, but it comes out much closer to the season.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but the way that they cover Auburn, though, always annoys me because, and this is the true of the sports media writ large, which is that there are two... I was trying to explain this to my wife a while ago. She's like, well, what are they saying about Auburn? I'm like, well, there's two modes they go into. If we just had a good season, but all of our good players have graduated and we're going to be rebuilding, they look at our good season and go, oh, Auburn's a top 10 team this year. Look out, Auburn can win the national championship. And then we end up, you know, not even in the top 25. Or there's like a year where we do bad, but you can tell we're rebuilding. You can tell we're bringing in new players. You can tell we got like a new offensive coordinator or something, and things could be better. And so they'll look at us not doing well the previous year, and they're like, oh, Auburn's not going to be any good. And then we end up in the top 10. You know, we're playing the national championship game or something. So they're always wrong, and they're always backwards because we are a roller coaster team, and they base the up... They based their prediction for the uphill years on the downhill years and the downhill years on the uphill years. You know what I mean? So
yes.
It's rare that we have back-to-back consistent years, and that makes predicting anything this year based on last year pretty much diametrically opposed, pretty much opposite.
That's fair. So the idea, the genesis for tonight's episode is basically that I wanted to kind of dive into a little bit what the preseason magazines think about Auburn and the SEC and kind of like their perceptions versus our perceptions.
Right.
Okay. And the important, you know, warning we're going to say up front is we are not going to violate the sanctity of the barbecue shows.
That is correct. The barbecue shows, for those that don't know, I think most of you know, but for those that are new that don't know, every year, later in the summer, John and I do either one big or two smaller, just depending on how we feel like doing it, episodes where we eat of the magical barbecue and use its mystical powers to allow us to predict accurately what will happen for Auburn and the rest of the SEC in the coming season. And what that means is that's when we unveil what we think specifically. So we usually don't have any problem. I think, would you agree, in years past, we haven't had much problem kind of, you know, alluding to what we think and kind of working around it. We just don't give, like, numbers until the barbecue show.
Fair.
Yeah. Okay.
And we're not going to talk so much about specific wins and losses as we're going to talk about, like, you know, position groups and how we feel about them and that
kind
of stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, so one of the things I wanted to walk through is at the beginning of this is to kind of, I thought it was interesting. One of the things the magazines always do now is they rank the different position groups, like in the whole SEC, like 1 to 14 for quarterbacks and 1 to 14 for running backs, and okay. The same for every position, right?
Okay.
And based on the magazines that I've looked at. And I've looked at Affont and Phil Steele and Lindy's. The strengths of Auburn's team and the perception of these magazines are defensive line, mm-hmm. offensive line, mm-hmm. special teams, defensive backs, and running backs. And the weaknesses of Auburn's team are linebacker, quarterback, and receiver.
Wow. Wow.
So that's, you say, wow, that surprises you?
You said the weaknesses were linebacker, quarterback, and receiver?
Yes.
Yeah, the whole thing surprises me. I mean, defensive line strength, yes. Offensive line strength, because they're all seniors and the coaching seemed to be getting better toward the end of last year, you got to think that we'll have a pretty decent – I don't think it's going to be a top 10 nationally or anything. It's not going to be like 2013 or anything, but it'll be good. It'll be good enough, serviceable. Now, next year, you hit the panic button. But, you know, but this year, yeah, it'll be all right. But and we know from our conversation with Brandon that there's more concern about wide receiver – than I think you and I had previously suspected, unless I'm wrong. I looked at what we've had the last couple of years at receiver and who he brought in, and I thought we were in pretty darn good shape. I mean, we only lost – we lost Slayton and
Ryan Davis.
Ryan Davis, yeah, who was – I mean, and I know one was our deep guy and the other was our kind of, you know, scat, stretch the field, you know, catch the short pass and make it something long kind of possession guy. And both were – well, I mean, Ryan Davis was – peerless at that. Slayton was okay, serviceable at his job. But that's pretty much all we really lost receiver-wise while we get back two of our more dependable veterans in the in Stove and Little White Dude.
Wee Willie Hastings.
Yeah, exactly. And and then we've got Seth Williams, who's maturing. We've got Schwartz, who's maturing. I mean...
We got the red shirt guy, Matthew Hill, that a lot of people
Matthew
like.
Hill.
And we're adding a transfer.
I mean, gosh, what? I felt like our receiving core, especially with the transfer, was about as deep as it's ever been, really. Because those guys each have something. You know, it's not like running back where you need a couple of bulldozers and then it's nice to add a Shiver or a McCaleb type around the edges. You know, with receivers, you can have four, five, six different kinds of receivers and be fine. And I mean, we, you know, I feel like we've got that. So I didn't really like grill Brandon on it. I was too in shock. But what do you think about our receivers? Is that true that they're as bad as all this now?
I think it's not bad. I think it's unproven. I mean, I think because Slayton was the big play guy for, you know, 90% of the big plays, right? And Ryan Davis was really, really reliable. I mean, he led the team in catches, I think, the last 3 years.
Yeah, well, he was, absolutely. But
and so I think the, you know, we have a lot of, you know, optimism. And again, I think Seth Williams is a really exciting young player, and Schwartz obviously is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people like Matthew Hill, and he made a lot of plays in the spring. So I think he could come in and be a player this year.
I look at those three young receivers, Schwartz, Hill, and Williams, and I see potentially the three that Cam threw to, Terrell Zachary, and the Texas guy.
Darvin Adams.
And Darvin Adams, yeah, those three guys. I mean, in similar ways, you know, one's really fast, one's a really big grab-it-out-of-the-air possession guy, and one's kind of a utility guy. And, I mean, those Cam did very well with those three alone, so we got other pieces to the puzzle besides them. I mean, I know they're not as proven, but, I mean, to say that they – are a weakness and then say our running back stable is a strength. I mean, maybe it, I mean, all we had last year in terms of running back was Booby for the workhorse and Shiver for the changeup. And that was pretty much it really, you know, and they're back.
Are you denigrating Cam Martin?
Is he still around?
He's still there. He was a junior last year.
Cam Martin is going to wheel his walker out on the field. Hey, fellas, it's me, Cam Martin. One more season to play my 18th year of eligibility. Good grief. I guess I knew he was coming back, but it's like, dang. So, I mean.
I think he, yes. Cam Martin is back, but we have two really exciting freshmen.
Yes, we do. That's the thing right there. But they're totally like true freshmen, right? They're totally unproven.
Yeah, but I think they don't, but we're not counting on them to be the guy. You know what I'm saying?
Well, if Whitlow gets hurt again, then one of them's going to have to be, because Shiver and Cam Martin ain't it.
Yeah.
They're nice add-ons.
Well, I mean, I think Shivers is a change of pace guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a, you know, 5 to 10 plays a game, change of pace, you know, But I think every down, I'm not sure he's there yet.
No, they are the nice mountain bikes you get off the rack of your SUV. You got to have an SUV.
Yeah. But I think DJ Williams might be able to be that SUV. He would. I'm excited about him.
Well, that's what I'm kind of hoping for. Yeah, but again, I mean, I just don't see how you can look at the receivers who have played a year and say, no, they're no good, and look at the running backs who are true freshmen and say, oh, they're a strength. I don't know. Now, I expect that about quarterback only because they're freshmen. But yes. But let me be clear about this. There is a vast difference between having a sucky quarterback back for a second year and knowing that's what you have versus having two freshmen with enormous potential who just haven't played before or very much. I mean, you know, it's like both of those could be a 2 out of 10 right now, but one is never going to get better than a 2. The other hopefully has nowhere to go but up. That's a very different 2. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. And the biggest thing with the freshman quarterbacks is they're going to get better.
Yes.
Over the course of the season. But also, like, are they going to make mistakes? Yes, 100%. They're going to throw interceptions. They're going to, you know, run the wrong way. They're going to do the handoff wrong, you know, whatever. They're going to, you know, read the defense wrong sometime and call the wrong play. But they're also going to make plays, like make things happen.
Yeah.
And both of them have that ability. And I think that, you know, the excitement and the potential of that playmaking ability, you know, if we can maximize that and minimize the damage from the mistakes, I think we're going to be in good shape with it. We need to just not get into situations where we're, you know, 3rd and 10 all the time, or we get behind a lot, and we're putting the game on their shoulders.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it's a good point, though, that I think that a few years ago, you know, wasn't it Pat Dye that said you lose a game for every freshman you start,
yes,
or whatever?
I was thinking of that quote when you were saying that.
Yeah. But on the other hand, that's the olden days, as my daughters would say. Whereas now, you know, you pulled this example out to me, I think, on one of our recent episodes, and I thought it was a very good point. You know, look at Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Alabama even recently, you know, they brought out younger quarterbacks who kind of displaced their older quarterbacks and sent them packing, and they did better with the freshmen.
That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, there's no reason why Nix or Gatewood can't be Lawrence or, you know, one of those guys. There's no
or
reason.
Fromm at Georgia.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, again.
Yeah, there's another one. Yeah, Fields is gone. Right. I mean, so.
I mean, Fromm, you know, the year before, Fromm was a true freshman, and the starting quarterback got hurt, and Fromm took over early in the third game, I guess, and they made it to the, you know, the national title game. So I think, you know, quarterbacks that have the kind of ability that Nix has, you know, those things are possible. And I think Gatewood, you know, it is built for Malzahn's offense. So yeah. I think in a different way, he has a lot to offer too. So I think the
as long
they
as
are
can,
freshmen, but you're right, it's a different era.
Yeah,
it's a different planet now with that.
As long as they can manage that relationship and manage who's in charge and not have a controversy, you know, because I would certainly, if Joey Gatewood got the starting job in game one and never gave it up, I could see Patrick Nix, Bo Nix being like, well, screw this. Why did I even come? And if he transferred away, we would be in deep trouble.
I don't see that happening, but it's, you know.
I think they'll mix it up enough that neither one of them will give up all hope, but we'll have to see. That's a very tricky thing to manage.
Yes.
Just ask Georgia, just ask Clemson, you know, over and over and over, so.
I want to go to two specific positions here to talk about tonight, but in terms of these the strengths and weaknesses and where they're ranked nationally. And the two I want to talk about are the offensive line or the linebackers. Which one do you want to do first?
Let's talk about the linebackers, because that's the one I was about to mention anyway. And I thought, even though they must be looking at who we lost, but I thought our guys behind them were just as good, if not better.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, we had great linebackers the past couple of years, okay?
Yeah.
Deshaun Davis, Darrell Williams, Montavious Atkinson, you know, were productive and reliable. They were really good tacklers. They were in the right place and made plays for, you know, for the team. Mm-hmm. And they were solid. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, again, if you've listened to this podcast a long time, you remember the days when we had no good linebackers.
Yeah.
And it was painful to watch us try to play defense. And, it pained me to watch us run the guys at their linebacker who weren't, you know, SEC caliber and weren't coached to know what they were doing. And we're in a different planet of that now with Steele and Travis Williams. Like, our linebackers are awesome.
If you want to know know how good Cam Newton was, we won a national championship with one linebacker on that team. That 2010 team had one linebacker on it.
One and a half.
Yeah.
But again, so we had three really solid, productive, experienced linebackers. And so we have guys coming back this year who have played, you know, in limited roles behind them. To start, probably Zakobi McClain and KJ Britt. KJ Britt is the middle linebacker, mm-hmm. you know, Deshaun Davis type. Mm-hmm. And then we have a couple of backup guys, you know, they're going to play a good bit. Chandler Wooten, you know, who got hurt in the spring. But then the other big guy that's out there is Owen Papo.
Yep.
Who is the other five-star signee besides Bo Nix. And he's a, you know, linebacker that is, you know, very exciting young player. And he's definitely going to play. So I think, like, those are your four guys right there. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if Papo ended up playing a bunch this year, nobody would be shocked. So I think we have they're all talented guys. You know, the guys like Britt and Wooten and McClain have been sitting behind, you know, the Deshaun Davises and Montavious Atkinsons for a couple of years, watching how they do their job, learning from them, listening to them,
right.
seeing how they play and how they carry themselves on and off the field during practice. So they know what they're supposed to do. So, I mean, I think, you know, are they going to, again, it's like the quarterbacks. Are they going to make some mistakes at times? Are they going to get fooled sometimes? Yes. But I think we're going to be fine at linebacker. I mean, I think there's going to, I mean, again, Deshaun Davis, his leadership and playmaking ability cannot be replaced. He was kind of the heart and soul of the defense at times last year. So that, you know, that doesn't magically reappear in the next guy.
No.
But at the same time, I don't think we're going to have, you know, guys out of position, guys getting run over, guys leaving, you know, offensive players wide open on passing routes. So that none of that stuff's going to happen. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, guys like Papo and McClain and Wooten, maybe we could have some younger explosive guys that could maybe get some more pressure in the quarterback from that position too. So
that's right. So what about offensive line?
So, you know, we went through this year last year where we had no experience coming back in the offensive line. It was a big problem, and they had some rough games, and we've all stressed out 100 times about offensive line recruiting for the future, which they've been doing a bunch of. And then, and actually, before I forget, we had a big 4-star wide receiver commit tonight.
Oh, tell us more.
Xavien Cooper, I think is his name.
Okay.
He's from Georgia. He's a, you know, a 4-star guy, like a top 200 player in the country kind of guy. He's 6'4".
Oh.
So I'm excited about that. It's always great to have big, tall wide receivers can go up over people and make plays. So,
well,
you know.
I did hear Keith Neighbor talking today about that we were likely to get him, and there were a couple more maybe this week coming up that we would be hearing from.
Yeah, they were saying it's looking like a pretty good time in recruiting, so it's exciting.
Yeah,
and again, like, you know, I'm excited about the young players at wide receiver, like you were talking about earlier. Like we have some good young players now, and we have some good young players coming in. So, excited to see how that works. But again, you got young players at receiver and young players at quarterback. They got to be in sync.
Right.
But again, so the linebacker thing I think was interesting. I guess like you with the wide receivers, I wasn't that worried about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like my perception was we're going to be okay. I mean, I'm not saying like we're going to have the best linebackers in the conference or anything, but I would thought we'd be fine. So that brings me to the big one, which is offensive line.
Right.
And, a year ago, it was a huge issue, and we didn't have any experience coming back, and offensive line really struggled. Now we have so much experience coming back that all of these preview magazines think we're going to have one of the best offensive lines in the country.
Well, I mean, if you go just by the fact that we've got, like, seniors across the row, that's nice.
I think it's some talent in there, too. I think, again, Prince Tega is going to get a lot of draft buzz this year. You're going to hear that a lot.
Yeah.
And so I think there's some talent there also, but I think it's talent combined with experience and games played, total games played, but games played together as a unit also. So
yeah.
Not just that they think this offensive line is going to be good in the SEC, but for example, Athlon thinks this offensive line group is going to be the ninth best offensive line in the entire country. And Phil Steele thinks it's going to be the fifth best offensive line in the entire country.
Wow. That's quite a change from the beginning of last season.
Yes.
Wow.
And so again, in the same way that I was kind of surprised about the way they looked at the linebackers and the wide receivers, I was surprised in this way because I think we have this perception of the offensive line of the way they were at the beginning of last season.
Yeah.
But that's not where they are now. And so everybody else's offensive line has gotten worse and our offensive line has stayed together and gotten better.
And that goes a long way toward protecting a young quarterback and working in some new running backs and receivers.
100%. So again, the best thing to help a young quarterback is a strong offensive line and a running game.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
If they're right, and if this offensive line is, as strong as they perceive it to be, that's a huge difference maker for us. Mm. And it could be something that, like you're saying, that could really be kind of the cornerstone of the offense.
Yeah, so, that would be very nice. I mean, yeah, you can honestly, I think in general, you can win more games in college football, particularly in like the SEC, with a great offensive line and a mediocre quarterback than with a mediocre offensive line and a great quarterback.
I think that's fair.
So I hope that turns out to be the case, that the offensive line is that good, because we know our defense, whatever you want to say about the linebackers, the defensive backs will be good. You know the defensive line is going to be good. So the defense should be pretty solid. Special teams should be pretty solid. If we can get a serviceable offense, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be 2014 as long as it's not 2015.
Again, I think the defense is going to be excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the special teams are going to be excellent. We had some struggles last year. Again, we had a new punter. We had new returners. We had a new kicker. And we kind of assumed because his brother was great that he was going to be great right out of the gate. And he struggled a little bit. But I think he's going to be better this year. He clearly has the leg.
Yeah.
And I think Sipos is going to be good. So I think the special teams – the rankings I see around them at different places are one of the top 10 in the whole country too. So I think we can have an advantage on a lot of teams in that area.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be certainly very interesting when we do the barbecue show to see what the barbecue tells us about all this. I'm bringing up the football schedules now because I know that one of the things we want to talk about is kind of like who has what kind of schedule. And I have some opinions about that. I'm not sure how much they compare with others. You want to talk about that yet, or am I jumping ahead?
Sure, go. No.
Well, I will admit Okay, you know, Auburn fans, we're always wanting to say we have the toughest schedule in the country, even in the years that we don't, although honestly, a lot of the years we do. But I will admit that South Carolina this year has a harder schedule than we do because South Carolina basically plays everybody we do, plus, I think, Alabama in the West, I think, and Clemson. So Alabama and Clemson as your, I think, let me make sure. I know that South Carolina's schedule is ridiculous, and I think it's marginally harder than ours. Let me see. I'm clicking the button now. Okay. So, yes, South Carolina plays North Carolina, Alabama, Missouri, Kentucky, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, blah, blah, Texas A&M, at Texas A&M, and Clemson. So South Carolina's out-of-conference teams are North Carolina and Clemson, both, right? South Carolina's Western rotating teams are Alabama and Texas A&M. That's pretty tough. Plus, they got to play Florida and Georgia. Okay. So, meanwhile, we play a similar schedule, but instead of Clemson, we have Oregon, who's a little bit lower than Clemson. It's still good, but yes, a little bit lower. And yes. But we do have to play at Florida. So, ours is similar to South Carolina. We just get Oregon in a neutral site instead of Clemson, and so and Alabama. Well, we had to play Alabama too, but so I think South Carolina wins that argument, but just, you know, marginally. Texas A&M is supposed to be harder than ours, and so we know they play everybody in the West. They also play at Clemson. And they play South Carolina, of course, at Georgia. Okay, so the reason people are saying that Texas A&M's schedule is so hard is they play at Clemson and at Georgia. And that's fair enough. That's pretty tough, plus the SEC West. So A&M is not going to win 10 games, I don't think. They're going to be doing – I think Texas A&M and Auburn are going to end up winning about the same number of games. And, in fact, the winner of the Auburn-Texas A&M game – may decide which team finishes higher overall in the West, because that one game could make the difference between the two schedules. And since it's at College Station, you got to think we have a better chance than they do.
That's
so
good.
I would either have us tied with A&M or third. What do you think?
I've seen a lot of these rankings already. Chris Lowe and ESPN had us first, and then these others after that. Phil Steele has South Carolina first and Auburn second and A&M fourth.
Really? How can you have A&M fourth when they play at Clemson and at Georgia and the SEC West?
He has Southern Cal ahead of them. I got to look and see who the heck they're playing.
That's
I know they're playing. I mean, obviously they play the conference and they play Notre Dame.
Yeah. A&M's schedule to me, I mean, we play Oregon, and then we play our usual West, and we play at Florida. So, I mean, and we play Georgia, of course. So, I can see Oregon at Florida and Georgia. But we have Georgia at home. We have Alabama at home. That's a little better than playing at Georgia and at Clemson, like South Carolina is. Or at Texas, like Texas A&M is, right? So, I don't know. You know me, the last thing I want to do is downplay anything. We've got a hard schedule. We got a hellaciously hard schedule. I just feel like so does South Carolina, so does Texas A&M. I think that Auburn-Texas A&M game is going to be like last man standing, basically, you know, after halfway through dealing with that crowd. So,
yes.
It is going to be interesting. You know that we have not played at Florida since the Byram freshman year double field goal at the end game?
Oh, I'm aware.
We played Florida once since that game, and it was, I think, 11 in Auburn.
I love playing Florida. I'm excited they're back on the schedule. So
yeah,
I can't wait to go down there and kick their ass around.
I'm seeing all these people writing that off as a loss. I don't necessarily think we haven't eaten the barbecue yet, but I am not saying that is a definite loss. I may still call it a loss. We'll see. But right now, I'm not just like looking at that and going, oh, we're going to lose that game.
it's a very tough place to play, and Mullen is a very solid coach.
Right.
But Auburn has more talent than Florida.
And we won there the last time we played them with Urban Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see. So, okay, so that's the schedule. So,
but again, it's just – so. You know, you end up with these, but guess who has the easiest schedule in the SEC?
Oh, let me guess. This is hard. I have to think hard. I have to really, really ponder.
Oh, for a muse of fire.
I have to really, really think. Who could it be, John? Who is it? Is it? You say who it is, and I'll give you my reaction.
It's Alabama.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him. My client should go right to jail. He's guilty. That man is guilty.
Alabama is guilty, John. They should go right to jail.
I say that it's Kentucky is worse than them.
Oh, really?
But they're the worst. That's very close, though.
Okay.
And they're the worst in the West.
Oh.
Despite Arkansas having a bunch of terrible teams. Just for entertainment value, Alabama's non-conference games are Duke in Atlanta.
Oh, my gosh.
New Mexico State.
Oh, my gosh.
Western Carolina. Southern Miss.
What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy.
I want you a little secret here, okay? They play at South Carolina is their East Road game.
Oh, wow.
They have A&M, at Mississippi State, at Auburn.
I saw in the AL.com prediction thing yesterday, for Alabama, they had projected losses none. Because I played anybody that can. I mean, and they said that, you know, like the one game that's even remotely questionable is Auburn, just because they have to play at Auburn, and you know how things can happen in that series in Auburn.
That's right.
So.
I thought that was just, you know, worth talking about. There's a bunch. One of the other things I enjoy for these kind of magazines is looking at the different depth charts and who's kind of coming and going in different places. And there are a number of teams that have kind of transfers,
mm-hmm.
Either leaving or going. And an example of this, I would point to Arkansas has two transfer quarterbacks coming in. They have Ben Hicks, was at Southern Methodist, with the current coach, who's now at Arkansas,
right?
And Nick Starkle from A&M, who transferred away when he lost that job.
He wasn't bad, I didn't think.
No, I didn't think Starkle was terrible. I thought he was fine. You know, he wasn't great, but he was solid. And I think he made a difference at A&M. You know, he was kind of a slightly below average SEC quarterback, and that's a huge, you know, dramatic increase over what Arkansas has rolled out there the last two or three years. So,
right. Yeah, and, you know, you got to give Arkansas credit for all their woefulness the last few years. You know, the two brothers that they had, those guys were – they were tough, you know. They were good, tough. They got killed, but they certainly – you can't fault them. They played their butts off and nearly got killed.
So, you got that right.
But they really
took a beating.
Yeah, but they did well, I thought. So, anything else transfer wise?
We should not forget about the transfers that are coming into Auburn before we keep going.
Well, I was
gonna
say, are we getting our running back that just transferred away back or something? Did you see that? That went to Miami.
Oh, I don't think so. Are you talking about the guy who transferred last year to Miami?
The H-back running back guy, Asa Martin.
I don't think he's coming back. But I was talking about like J.J. Wilson, You know, he's coming from Arizona State. He's gonna be an H-back kind of guy.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's good. Yeah.
We have a transfer from Minnesota who's a defensive back. I haven't heard anything about him, but
no,
he could be another guy to add some depth. You know, and then we have this wide receiver who originally went to Oklahoma and then went to a smaller school. He's going to come in and play right away. So I think those three guys could help in the short term.
Yeah, they're trying to replace Slayton with that guy, right? They need a downfield threat, basically. So that would be nice. I'd love to have three or four good hands guys and speed guys in the foreground, and then that guy zipping down the background. That would be perfectly fine with me.
I mean, I think the other transfer that the people need to be aware of at Auburn is the Mississippi State got a transfer quarterback, a guy named Tommy Stevens, who was at Penn State, and I've mentioned him before. He's a big guy, a good player, knows that system the coach runs well, so I think he can make a difference there.
Yeah. All right. So is it coming up on time for listener questions?
It is. Did you want to thank the patrons first, or do listener questions?
I was going to wait until I was sure that we were getting to that point before I did that. So yes, absolutely. Yeah. Before we do our famous and enjoyed listener question segment, we have to of course thank our patrons, because these shows, we have three networks now. Basically, we have one big network, but we have three separate channels. There's the AU Wishbone channel, there's the White Rocket Entertainment channel, and there's On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. And each of those is available on iTunes with different types of content. And John and I appear on all of them from time to time, of course, mainly this one. And we have to pay all the bills and keep our programs, particularly this show, because we produce this weekly during the season, keep the bills paid and keep things on the air. And so our great supporters via Patreon do that. For as little as $1 a month, you can join the AU Wishbone Auburn family. You get various benefits. There's all sorts of things that we talk about year-round, including we're currently enjoying this season of the Fantasy Formula One season, and my team is actually in first place. I'm very excited, but then Mira's three teams are in second, third, and fourth, so she's breathing down my neck. But we do a bunch of other things. We sent out a bunch of free copies of Decades of Dominance last year to patrons as a way of thanking them. A variety of other things. So as little as $1 a month, just go to www.patreon.com. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, for this show, you can just go to www.auwishbone.com. That's the easiest one to remember, www.auwishbone.com. There's a big orange link. You click on there, you can go and sign up, and you can help support the show as much as you feel like parting with. And we have to thank those who are already doing that, including Brendan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, and Carl Von Drunker. There's Phil Amthor, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. And then we have a couple of new additions lately, Kevin Smith and Clarence Alford, along with David Hegler, Robert Mendenhall, Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, and David Evers. There's Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, and Joel Beckham, Theodore, Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor Sanford, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey. I hope Mickey doesn't mind that I do that. It's a thing of affection, okay? Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, and Dave Powell. We have a couple of other new folks, included David Smiley and Jeremy Minton. And then there's Lane Middleton, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachian, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick. And there is Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Brent Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Surfer Chickify, and our other one-time donors and anonymous donors. We thank you all. www.auwishbone.com. And so that means it is time for...
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Mira couldn't believe that she used to sound like that when she heard that the other day. She doesn't sound like that anymore. I have to get her to redo it. She's 11 now, believe it or not. So, what do we have in the mailbag this week, John?
All right. First question comes from Rich Reimer.
Yeah, Rich.
Who says, am I the only one who's questioning why T.D. Moultrie, who is compared to Reuben Foster in terms of on-the-field talent as a five-star linebacker, is solely playing edge rusher? We get guys stuck in certain roles after they make a play there. For example, Eli Stove, the jet sweep. So what do you think about that? Number one, that analogy, but also, like, what do you think about his question?
Well, I totally get his point. The only thing is I don't know as much about Moultrie to be able to speak intelligently on where he should be playing or what his talent level actually is. But I totally agree with him that it does seem like we get players in a kind of a rut and don't really do much beyond that with them, which is weird. So what do you think?
I think it's fair. I think, especially when players are young, it's easy to put them – they don't want to do too much with them. They don't want to have them play in two or three positions.
Right.
They don't want to be having – try to do multiple things. They want them to learn one thing and kind of master it. And so I think, you know, they view Moultrie as a guy that could come – you know, play that – the buck pass rusher position and be a stud player there. And I think that is so valuable, and the need for pass rush is so great that they don't want to take him out of that and put him back, you know, outside, big outside linebacker kind of, and take him and kind of reps away from him learning the craft of the edge rusher. So I think that in my mind, that's what it is. It's not that he couldn't do it. And if we had a bunch of injuries at linebacker, it'd probably be something they'd put out on the table to talk about.
So they're just trying to make him the best edge rusher he can be rather than, well.
Because I think they view that as they got other guys that can play linebacker effectively.
Yeah.
And so I think it's, but he can do this and other guys can't. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, he can contribute more to the team here by making this happen.
That works for me, but it is kind of a mystery. It is kind of weird how we seem to do that more than maybe some teams. But yeah, your point is well taken. So
that's fair. All right, the next question is from Scott Crankton,
okay,
who writes us an email to auwishbone@gmail.com and says, gentlemen, on the first day of fall football practice, I would like you to predict the number of players who will be number one, players who will have been dismissed from the team. Do you want me to read them all and then you guess, or you?
Yeah, let's see the list and then let me hear the whole list. Okay. Players will be dismissed from the team.
Number two, players not present due to personal matters. Okay, which, as he says, is coach speak for they're as good as gone. And a number of players with day-to-day injuries, which is coach speak for they have a serious injury which jeopardizes the season.
And my career. All right, start back over at the top and let's see.
All right. First day of fall practice, what will be the number one players dismissed from the team?
Yeah, this crowd, not more than one or two, surely, right?
Yeah, I 100% there.
Okay.
Again, his number two is players not present due to personal matters. I think that situation has changed with the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Where if players at number one, if players want to leave, or number two, if they are in the doghouse and they don't want to stay on the team in the doghouse, they go to the transfer portal and then let other teams know they're available.
Yeah.
And so I think if that becomes a news item. You know, in the old days when, you know, the transfer portal thing wasn't there, players didn't have that mechanism, so they just stayed kind of at the doghouse on the team. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right. That's a really good observation.
We didn't hear about it till that, you know, the first press conference of the fall camp.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. That's a good point.
So I'm skeptical about that one. I mean, there may be, maybe there's one or two guys that are, you know, there's some issue they're resolving with eligibility or something. But
right.
And then the last one is players who are day to day with injuries, which is coach speak for serious injuries. And
well, that's what I'm wondering about Chandler Wooten.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, there's, and again, like we have, you know, we still got Stove and Hastings coming back from these injuries. What percentage of their former selves are they going to be at that point?
Right.
And you know, if one of them gave up football, would it shock me? No. So, you know, and there may be some other guys on the team that look at the depth chart at their position and they're like, you know, whoever, Malik Miller or whatever, looks at when the freshman come in and he sees he's not going to get any reps and he's a little concerned or something. So, so you know, I see more of that kind of thing happening. I mean, there's always, it's football. There's always going to be injuries. So
yeah,
I'm not, I don't want to predict a huge number of that, but
I guess I won't be
knock on wood when we say that one.
Right. I guess I won't be as confident about the linebacker thing we were just talking about until I know more about Wooten. Cause that did me get me worried a little bit.
It's fair.
All right.
All right, and the other one is I'm going to remember this one because somebody asked me in person. I work with people that are a couple of actual Auburn fans, and I didn't tell them I was going to ask this question on the podcast, but I thought it was a pretty good question when we were talking about the season.
Okay.
You know, we know how we feel about Alabama and Georgia.
We do. Yes.
Okay. Which team other than those do you dislike the most, either in the conference or out of the conference?
Ooh. You know, it varies, doesn't it? It, because there have been years that I just couldn't stand Tennessee. There have been years I couldn't stand LSU. There have been years I couldn't stand Florida. Am I forgetting anybody? There's been years I really couldn't stand Mississippi State, to be honest with you.
I mean, again, Arkansas, there's been years I couldn't stand Florida State.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think it really just varies depending on what they've been doing the last couple of years. I mean, I think that most Auburn fans, certainly the Auburn fans I see on Twitter, I haven't really joined in on this consensus yet. I'm going to see what you think about it. Auburn folks on Twitter, there seems to be a growing consensus that we didn't used to hate Georgia fans as much as we hate them now. And I'm not sure why that is, other than they're doing better than they did under Rick for a long time, or under Donnan, or under Goff or whatever. Is that it, or what?
I mean, statistically, I would tell you they're doing exactly the same as Rick had done at this point in his career.
That's about right. Yeah.
They are much more confident and cocky now than they ever were then.
Yeah. And it doesn't, they don't wear that well. There are fan bases that wear cocky better, and there are fan bases that wear it worse. For the longest time, Florida State did not know what to do with their success. They just didn't know what to do with it. I think they've had enough of it now and then lost it a couple of times that they've kind of gotten better. I think Georgia still doesn't really know, right, what to do. So who would you put third then?
I really struggle with this question because
I think people that are younger than us wouldn't say Florida or Tennessee because we haven't played them enough.
Yes.
But you and I remember the 80s and the 90s when, you know, we couldn't stand Florida and Tennessee.
Yes. Lord, I hated Florida for a while.
Oh, gosh. No kidding. Oh, man. I mean, I used to couldn't stand Steve Spurrier. Now I really like him. You know, that just shows you how things change. It's remarkable.
The school I want to say is LSU, but I don't know if I feel that way.
I know. I mean, and they've even given us reason over the years, and still I'm like, well, are they really a hard three, you know, or are they kind of like a soft three? And And I mean, outside of the SEC, honestly, it's it outside the SEC, it's really teams I just want to get revenge on. So there's Georgia Tech, there's Clemson. Lord help me, there's Central Florida that needs a good smacking, you know. Central Florida has a beatdown coming. I never thought I'd say that. They got uppity, and they got a beatdown coming. You know me, I have predicted for 25 years, John, that Central Florida would be a great program before I died. And they ain't there yet, but you know what? They sure think they are. They think they are. They're not. But they think.
So, they think they are.
Yeah, they do. They got a beatdown coming.
I mean, again, for me, Florida State is the non-conference teams is way up there at the top.
Yeah.
Way more than any of those other teams you mentioned. Even I hate them way more than Clemson, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm just sick of Clemson.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, I'd like to beat Clemson and Georgia Tech and then never play them again.
Sure.
I'd like to just close the books on them and then, you know.
That's fair.
We always get teams when they're at their height, though, right? We got USC right when they were starting their big run. We got freaking Clemson every year when they've been on their tear. I'm tired of this. I mean, we're getting Oregon this year. Oregon was crap for the last 3 years or so. So we slapped them on the schedule, and guess what? Top 10.
100%. I think if you really believe this, and you want to go, you should go bet some futures money on some of the teams on Auburn's schedule coming up down the road.
Oh, haven't we been putting off playing Penn State until they get good again?
Again, we had North Carolina next year.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they'll be great.
Okay. They just hired the two great – I mean, again, I don't love the Mack Brown hire, but he had two great coordinators.
Right.
The offensive coordinator from Ole Miss and the defense coordinator from Army.
Right.
They're really good. Cal's had a great defense the last 2 years. If they could do anything at all on offense, they'd have won that call.
I'm sure Alan Green is on the phone with him going, are you going to be great this year? No, not this year. All right, we can put it off another year. I mean, I don't mean that on purpose, but that's what it seems like. It seems like we always wait until these teams are murderer's row before we put them on the schedule.
Well, and again, you know, whatever – 6 years from now, whatever that is, that'll be when Chip Kelly gets UCLA back to full speed.
Oh, gosh. No kidding. Yep. Oh, by that time, Leach will be from Washington State. He'll be down there making them an air raid team and killing us or something. He's not done. He's going to go somewhere else before it's over. I see that coming. I don't think he retires from Washington State. I think he's going to go
think so either.
One more. I think he's got one more big stop in him.
All right. That's it for listener questions.
All right. Our last little thing. I don't know how much we have, but we can click the button and we can find out.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
All right, so we've kind of covered, I think, most of this, but what else might be going on around the SEC? I guess one thing we haven't talked about is that around the SEC, if Jay Tate is to be believed, everybody's got a better football stadium than we do now. Did you see that?
I did. I listened to that. I think the stadium as a whole, A to Z, again, you have to put money in things for them to get better. And a lot of these other schools have put significant money into their football stadiums and improving them. And we haven't done any major things that, you know, major real make Jordan Hare better in a while. We all know there's things that need to be done. So,
yeah.
I mean, saying that it's a, you know, bottom half of the SEC stadium, I think is, you know, it's not unreasonable. It doesn't mean it's not a great place to go see a game. It just means that it's a keeping up with the Joneses thing and other people have been spending more money making their stadiums better.
You know, we were just at the Cardinals stadium in St. Louis the other night, and the Cardinals fans here all just love it and think it's the Cardinals are the greatest thing ever and their stadium's the greatest thing ever. And a friend of mine who's a big baseball guy who's been all around, he says if the Cardinals fans really traveled around and they understood how much they're paying for how little compared to what you get in Kansas City or what you get at Wrigley Field or whatever, he said they would riot But he said they just don't know, and so they pay all this money and get very little back. And I'm thinking, that's kind of how I feel like maybe Auburn folks are. We don't all travel around and see what other programs have as much. And so we just assume it's Auburn, it must be great, you know. But I think it was Will Collier that pointed out, you know, you can't still judge by how things were at the end of the Pat Dye era. You know, we felt that's like, right. Well, if we're bigger than Bryant Denny in 1987, then that's good for the rest of history. And it's just not. I've said since the early 80s that we needed to brick up the west side. I hate the way that, you know, the east side looks great. The west side has always looked kind of pitiful with the open, exposed, you know, the supports for the deck. And they really need to improve that. And that's just the appearance on one side. There's so many other things they could do. And I'm only down there like once every 2 years. So there's others that should know way better than me or you, I guess. But anyway, I wanted to throw that out there. I wanted to see what you thought about it. And the other thing is the facility, right? I mean, we're hearing that basically our president got fired over this this football facility, right?
That's so we should have had that discussion of, do you have any strong feelings about the Auburn presidency and its impact on athletics?
Yeah, I'm not there to be impacted other than just, you know, wanting them to get moving on the football facility, I guess. And the baseball one that's on pause, too.
I'm in favor of people, you know, pick good people and let them go to work and don't meddle in their operations.
Exactly, yeah. So I did see that they announced the group that's going to be studying what goes in there. It's funny, you know, I think it was either Jay Tate or somebody was pointing out that if this was Alabama, Saban would just say, I want this, 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 and this, and that's what they would build. But for Auburn, there's no way Gus Malzahn gets to say, I want this, 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 and this. So they've actually put together like a 12-person committee to do that. But there is one former player, I think it was Gerard Powers, is going to be on the committee along with the usual suspects like Alan Green and one of the rich guys on the board and all that. So hopefully, you know, I'm assuming this thing's going to be built using Osmos pressure treated lumber.
I don't think so. It's going to be steel. But
there you go. Anything else around the SEC that I'm not thinking of?
No, I mean, Georgia's had a few guys arrested this offseason.
Stop the presses.
And there was all this, it was all Mark Richt losing control. Yeah. But they've had more guys arrested this year than some of Mark Richt's bad.
You're
years,
telling so. Me Georgia has players going to.
What the hell is the world coming to?
I just don't know. This is crazy.
And I'm reluctant to go there because I don't want to cast the first stone. but it you know, again, Auburn is, I want to give the coaching staff credit that Auburn's football program has been, you know, knock on wood, you know, recruiting a good caliber of person, and it things have gone pretty well recently. And I think Georgia's had five guys arrested this offseason. So
I don't know what the problem is at Georgia. I don't know what those guys could be doing over there that
smoke weed every day.
That could possibly be the problem. I really don't. But
there's some of that going on for sure.
Yeah, I think so. We've had our days now. We can't, you know, like you said,
that's
houses.
Why. Like,
yeah.
I have honestly stopped tweeting about that kind of stuff. Yeah, exactly. Where I used to just rag at other programs mercilessly when their guys got in trouble.
Yeah, just gotta.
And I've kind of stopped doing that because we all live in glass houses.
We do, absolutely. And SEC is nothing but one giant glass stadium. Absolutely right. So, all right, I guess that'll do it for us.
That'll do it.
All right. So I guess we're John and I are currently deep in negotiations, and by that I mean he sent me an email. I haven't read it yet, but we are currently deep in negotiations for when to do what. Right. So we've got at least one, if not two. Let's see how we want to do it. And we've kind of got it down to one show, I think, these days. Barbecue show, where we will be laying out what we think will happen for 2019 for Auburn and the rest of the SEC. And we've got, isn't there another show we do somewhere in there? I can't remember.
I mean, we'll do some other kind of preseason shows, and then we'll kind of have a depending on, we'll look at your schedule and stuff. We'll do kind of a week one preview of the Oregon games.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because I'm always at Dragon Con for week one, and I'm not able to come back and immediately do our post, you know, first game show until the middle of the week. So it'll be good to go ahead and talk about Oregon a little bit right beforehand, before I have to leave. If you missed it, last episode we did the Brandon Marcello visit for this year, the Brandon Marcello experience, and Brandon had some good stuff to say. We always appreciate him being so good to come on here and help us with our show, and it was, so you can check that one out at either at auwishbone.com or at podbean.com, and you can always follow our show on Podbean as well as on iTunes, and different ways to do it. And be on the lookout, patrons, you know, you should be on the lookout for episode 6 of We Believe coming up probably. I'm about halfway through editing it now, and it's a really good one. Got some good quotes from Reynolds in it. Got some good quotes from Jerry Hennen in it and some other stuff. Jeremy Henderson. Cole Kublik. I think I got a little bit of him in there. And then got a lot of good game audio and good discussion with John and me. So be looking for episode 6, which is the first half of the Tuberville era. And those of you who are not patrons, if you want to hear those shows way earlier than everybody else, just as little as $1 a month gets you in on that. And then I think non-patrons will be hearing our Terry Bowden episode in a couple of weeks, maybe, from a while back. So we'll roll that one out. I usually roll them out when I roll out the next one for the patrons, roughly, every couple of months, 2 or 3 months. So, all right, well, I think our time is up, and we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.